Gaming in the Six. I am Christine Chubb, your host for today. Sitting next to me is the lovely Momen Qureshi.
Isn't that the special part?
It's
face
so
to face.
Face to face.
It's like it's 2017 and we're doing an episode of our old show. Look at each other in the face.
It's a whole new experience.
It's delightful. I miss this. I miss seeing people face to face.
Right? Me too.
But I'm fairly certain about 5 minutes into this episode, I'll be like, I wish I was on my bed right now like I am for all the other episodes.
I do wish I was in my pajamas.
Sitting on my bed, by the way, not lying down. I'm not that lazy. I'm lazy, but I'm not that lazy.
I wish I was in my pajamas, but this is fair enough. It's nice to see your lovely face.
Hey, you too. I mean, we're on the radio. We're on audio format, so we can make people believe we're in our pajamas.
All right.
We're really the only ones that know we're face-to-face dressed properly.
Fair enough. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you like us, hit subscribe. We're available on iTunes and Google Play right now.
Yeah.
Also SoundCloud. We are kind of almost everywhere, but not everywhere. We're trying.
We're on the Twitter. We're on the Instagrams.
We have so many things from ways that you can follow us.
We have the MySpaces.
We have an exciting show this week that, although we are a gaming show, we're going to talk a lot about movies for some strange reason.
But not unrelated.
Not unrelated. And also, we're going to go back to E3 for a little bit to find out what the folks at Nintendo have planned.
Nintendo?
Yeah, we're going to talk to Andrew Collins, a community manager for Nintendo Canada.
What?
About what they showed off, what they've got lined up for their 2018 lineup, and will it be as good a year for the Switch as it was last year?
I asked all those questions and more.
And more! So we're going to talk first about a little franchise that you like a lot and that I still have not jumped into.
Which, frankly, before we get into this, you and I have been friends now for 8, 9, 10 years?
Almost 10. I started at 10 years ago.
It makes
September.
Me strongly question our friendship that I gave this to you as a birthday present. No, like some 6 years ago, I gave you the first and second editions of this game and still not played it.
It's true. I actually did start replaying it a few months ago, and I got to
How can you replay something you've never played before?
Well, I played like the first 2 hours of it originally, so in my head I'm replaying it. And I got to a very frustrating spot where I got stuck, and then I started playing something else.
Yeah, that'll happen.
So I just hate the shooting mechanics of the first game.
We should really tell people what game we're talking about.
We are talking about the Honorable Sir Glorious Nathan Drake.
Yeah.
And the Uncharted franchise.
Yeah. I wish I could play the music right now. It's playing in my head. The big beginning. The groom at the beginning. I can't sing it. It's terrible.
You're doing great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, the best part is you don't know what the music sounds like, so I could just be making it up.
You know who does know what the music sounds like? The handsome, the charming, and the dapper Nathan Fillion.
Canadian, too.
Is he really?
He's delightfully Canadian.
Oh, I like him even more now.
Yeah.
This week, they dropped what might be the best fan film I have ever seen in my entire life. It was an Uncharted fan film starring Nathan Fillion as Nathan Drake.
Can we just officially start calling him Nathan Drake Fillion now?
I love it.
So that's what I'm going to call him.
Like,
So there's so much to talk about and so much to unpack here.
Yep.
First of all, I'm out covering a very serious story, and you send me a text that says, "Stop whatever you're doing. You have to go watch this right now, right now, right now." I'm going to give you a picture. I am standing outside the legislature at Queen's Park on the second floor waiting for some ministers to come out. And I'm like, what the hell is this about? I don't even know. And so I'm like, unfortunately, I cannot stop what I'm doing because I have a job and I have to go do reporting. So eventually I finally get back to my desk, and like several hours later, I finally click play and watch this thing. And oh my God.
Right?
So the thing is, Uncharted is my favorite series of all time. If you've listened or followed me on Twitter or anything, you know that that is the case. And it's always been the series that has like lent itself to potentially being made into a fairly good movie slash like TV series, if that's the way you want to go with it. And there was talk for a while about Mark Wahlberg doing it. There was talk for a while about, was it like Jesse Eisenberg or something, was like loosely attached to doing it. They were going to do a younger version. But the thing that the fans of the series always wanted was Nathan Fillion to play Nathan Drake because, hey, he looks like Nathan Drake. And also, he's a guy who's like funny and like can do off the cuff stuff like Nathan Drake can. So it seemed like Nathan Fillion playing Nathan Drake would be, but he was never talked about in those realms because Nathan Fillion, for the most part, is a TV guy. He's been on several TV shows, Firefly, Castle, whatever. I guess he was never really in the conversation. And then when you sent me the link to this, I was like, oh my God, this is what we've been waiting for. And holy crap, is it good?
Yep. I was shocked. I was, from the second this started playing, I was shocked at how amazing this was. And the first thing I thought was, this is Deadpool.
Right.
This is the teaser that happened to come out that accidentally slipped that got this movie made.
Yeah, I mean, tell that story. Like what Ryan Reynolds and, was it Tim Miller? I think Tim Miller did it with them.
Yeah, accidentally leaked some footage from a possible Deadpool movie and people went crazy.
Yeah, they kind of shot a demo and were like, here's what it looks like.
Yeah, we've been trying to get this movie made for 10 years. Let's see if the public actually wants it.
Yeah.
And I felt like this is what it is. Because that, it was so good. It's so well made. It's so clever. It's so, like, beautiful looking. It's so true to the characters.
When we say it looks so good, we literally mean it looks so good, as in the way the film looks, the way it's shot looks. Because there's been lots of great fan films made over the past, you know, 10 to 15 years since YouTube and the internet really kind of picked up steam and gave people the ability to make things themselves.
Yeah.
But this one looks super professional. It looks really well done. And then they got the sort of the feel of Uncharted, that kind of nuance of like Indiana Jones-esque action adventure, but at the same time really clever and funny and off the cuff and just like all of it packed into one, really well done.
Yeah, they went all out. Like that thing just reeked of money and like good times. And I was very happy. I was very nervous because I saw it almost right away after it came out. And I watched it on YouTube and I was like, please say that the numbers start going up really, really quickly. Because I thought, well, what if it doesn't? What if it's just like, you know, a handful of gamers are kind of excited about it and that's it. And then more people started tweeting about it and then more people started tweeting about it. And then it was just like growing and growing and growing. I was like, yay, make this a thing.
Now, here's the problem with this whole thing. They made something great. And it's something that I don't even if you're not a fan of Uncharted, I think as a gamer, having been subjected to years upon years of terrible, at best mediocre video game movies, you see this and you're like, oh, it can be done. Oh, you can make something good based on a video game if it's done with care and the right people are involved and they make it properly. But the problem with this is it's such a tease.
Yeah.
It's such a tease. Like, will somebody greenlight it and be like, yes, let's make this? And number two, even if they do greenlight it, will they let Nathan Fillion and whoever wrote and directed and produced and did all the cinematography, will a big time studio just let them do their thing and be like, hey, you showed us you can do 15 minutes worth, we'll let you do the whole thing? Or will they studio it up and put their fingers all over it and give them notes and then change everything?
That's always the question. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if they are doing it the Deadpool way, they're doing it right. They're going to go in and be like, this is what the people liked. They liked everything about this.
Exactly.
And I think Nathan Fillion, as much as I like him, I don't think if he walked into a casting room, people would be like, you'd be able to carry an entire cinematic franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think he's that kind of guy that people think about. Although he can. He's a great actor. He's really funny.
Sure.
But I think that this kind of proves that maybe there is something out there.
And can I just make this point? I don't think people thought that about Chris Pratt either. When Chris Pratt was Andy Dwyer on Parks and Rec, even though he was hilarious and stole so many of the scenes in that show, I don't think studio execs looked at him and thought, this guy's going to be a leading man in Hollywood. But guess what? Flash forward 10 years, and he's like the biggest leading man in Hollywood, right? Between the Jurassic series and the Guardian series. And, you know, he's doing, like, he was in Passengers with Jennifer Love Hewitt. That's not right.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Close. You know, like, so he is now a leading man. So I think I think we're in a time now where Hollywood is starting to at least change their thinking a little bit, and hope and this type of movie is the type of movie that studios are making now, right? The big budget action movies. That's all they're making. Either it's a superhero movie, it's a sci-fi movie, it's a big action adventure movie. That's all that studios are really throwing their money behind.
Yep.
So if they can show that this is something that the public wants, hopefully they get to make it. And, you know, I think Nathan Fillion is charming enough, he's funny enough, he's charismatic enough, he's been around the block a few times where he has a core following between Firefly, between the people that watched him on, I almost said Bones, on Castle, all those people. they know who he is, so he's got a following. He's not an unknown.
Yeah.
He's a known. He's not A-list Hollywood known, but he's a known. So I feel like if somebody was willing to bankroll this movie and give them a shot, God, please give them a shot. Please give them a shot. I say this as an Uncharted fan. I say this as a Nathan Fillion fan. And I just say this as a video game fan, to just let somebody try, at least try, to make a good one.
Now, what would you say if this turned out into not a movie, but a Netflix series?
Oh, 100% on board.
Yeah.
On board. Maybe even a better idea. Right? Like, I mean, I think obviously you look at it and you think this is comparable to Tomb Raider. It's comparable to Indiana Jones. So the obvious thought is that it would be a movie. But if Netflix said, we want to make a 10-episode series out of this, book it. Let's go.
Yeah.
I'm all, and that's obviously more the wheelhouse that Fillion is known for. So yeah, sure. Make a 10-episode Netflix series or Hulu series or whoever wants to make it.
Yeah.
Let them do it. And I think the thing with Uncharted 2 is that Uncharted in its own self is a lot of tongue-in-cheek in a lot of ways. You know, Nathan Drake says stuff that's tongue-in-cheek, and sometimes it becomes a little self-aware, like not Deadpool-esque where he looks straight into the camera and starts monologuing, mm-hmm. but they're a little self-aware. And I think if they added those bits into a TV show, it would be really great.
Yeah.
They could do it really well. So I'm talking to you, President of Hollywood. make it happen.
What do you think, Gaming in the Sick listeners? Tell us, tweet us. Do you like the idea? Did you watch it? Are you super excited? Would you watch the movie? What about a Netflix series? Share us your thoughts.
If you haven't watched it, I believe if you go to the Gaming in the Six Twitter account, we did tweet out a link and perhaps could tweet out another link.
It's 15 minutes and it's absolutely worth your time. Speaking of movies, an adorable little sequel came out, which mm-hmm. was also a long time coming.
Long time coming.
Moment you went to see Incredibles 2.
Yeah.
Was it Incredible 2?
It absolutely is. 14 years in the making. 14.
That's crazy.
You know what's crazier about it to me? Not that it took 14 years, but that in a world where all studios want to make is sequels, that it took them 14 years to get to this one. Now, it took them like 10 years because I guess they've been making it for 4 years. But like, in a world where all studios are cranking out a sequel after sequel after sequel and franchise after franchise, they kind of slept on this one or just like went in another direction. I knocked your helmet over and started doing all this other stuff. And so I don't know why it took them this long, but maybe in a way it was good because fans were ready for it. They wanted it. They got the original cast back. So it's Coach Craig T. Nelson. I was okay. Like, what is his name? You and I know him as Coach. Holly Hunter, Sam Jackson, Sarah Vowell is back as Violet. So all the original cast members are back, which is great. And what's kind of neat about this movie is even though 14 years in real time has passed, this movie picks up right where, and when I mean right, man, I mean right where the last one ended off, as in like credits roll at the end one and credits start at this one and you are exactly where the last one ended off.
That's ballsy.
So yeah. So they're like, yeah, we know 14 years has gone by, but we're going to pretend it's only been like 5 seconds and we're just going to go straight into this movie. And sometimes sequels, they try a little too hard or it loses a little bit of that magic that they had in the first one because there's, you know, there was something in the first Incredibles that was really kind of authentic and that's still here. I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say it's as good as the first one. It's different, but it's still really good. So what happens in this movie is it picks up exactly where the last one left off. So superheroes are back. They know they're back. The Incredibles have just defeated Syndrome and then they come back and then, you know, the story kind of picks up from there and then it's a little bit more of Bob Odenkirk is in this, which is kind of cool.
Yay!
Yeah.
I love Bob
and
Odenkirk.
He plays a guy who is a really wealthy guy who wants to bring superheroes back into the mainstream for good and have them accepted back in society. And so he kind of hatches a plan where he reaches out to Mr. Incredible, Elastigirl, and Frozone and says, we're going to bring you guys back one by one, but they focus on Elastigirl first. And I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but he kind of says, we're going to go step by step and bring them back to the point where people can love them. And the plot unfolds, and of course there's a villain that comes through, and then there's another villain that comes through, and the whole thing kind of plays out. But it's still got the charm of the first one. It's still very funny. They focus a lot on Jack-Jack the baby because at the end of the first one, you don't know whether he has powers or not. And then this one, he obviously has powers, and it comes through. But it's still very charming, very funny, very entertaining, very good straight through. So I really, really enjoyed this. Pixar hasn't hit home runs with all their sequels. I think Finding Dory was clearly not as good as Finding Nemo. I think Monsters U wasn't as good as Monsters, Inc. I think Cars 2 and 3 were nowhere close to as good as Cars 1. This one is really good. This one's really good. I think it's comparable to 1. I think 1 is still the best one, and I think 1 still holds a special place in people's hearts because it was also semi kind of early in the Pixar tenure. I think it was like one of their first 5 or 6 films, and now Pixar is just like this juggernaut that's rolling. But it's really good. I highly recommend it, especially if you like the first one, especially if you like Pixar. Pixar's on a roll now because I think Coco was fantastic. I think Inside Out was really good. So they've made some really good movies of late. Also, an addendum. There's always a animated short before.
I wanted to ask you about this one, yeah.
Yeah, there's always an animated short before the movie, and this one is really, really good. Oftentimes with Pixar, that's what steals the show, is the little animated short they have before it. This one's really good. It takes place in Toronto, which is awesome. It's made by, I wish I remembered her name, but it's made by this woman who was born and raised in Toronto, and so she made this movie about an Asian family. I'm not sure if they're Japanese or Chinese or Korean. Because nobody talks in the movie, right? So you don't know exactly what their cultural background is. But it's a really, really sweet, touching story about a mother and her son and the relationship of him being a baby and then growing up and becoming an adult. And all throughout the movie, you can see, like, when they're at the park, you can see the CN Tower in the background. And so it's very clearly they're in Toronto. And it's so sweet and it's so touching. And, like, by the end, you're like... All right, I'm ready to laugh now. And then they go to Incredibles. So it's really good. It's really good. I highly recommend. Well, if you see Incredibles, you'll see this movie anyway with it. So
is it had to do with the dumpling, right?
With the dumpling, right.
Okay, yeah. There was a lot of things online about how people did not get it. They didn't understand it at all.
I mean, you know, like this is kind of something that I get into this with my brother all the time. He likes things that hit you over the head with a sledgehammer and like every little thing explained. I am okay with not having everything spoon-fed to me and explained end-to-end. I'm okay with a little ambiguity or a little, like, you just take out of this whatever you got out of it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was pretty, like, it was pretty self-explanatory. I kind of got it. I didn't think the kid was actually a dumpling. But, you know, if that's what you thought, then whatever. You enjoy it the way you enjoy it. But it was good, though. I liked it. I dug it. Cool. So please, Christine, don't wait your entire life to see Incredibles 2 because it's good.
I've never seen the first one, actually.
I don't understand how we're friends. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know how we have become very good friends because, I mean, I guess our love of comedy has joined us.
We have a lot of movies that we have actually seen.
True.
That are similar.
I think our friendship is more based on television than it is on movies, to be honest.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. Also, video games.
Also, video. Yeah. Also, the show we have right now.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know what it's definitely not based on is music.
that's true. That's 100%.
I mean, we kind of grew up listening to the same 90s alternative rock bands, but that's really where it stops.
Yeah, I would say that. So where would you rank Incredibles 2 in the vast list of Pixar's? Would you put it in like a top 10, top 15?
I'd say it's a top 10 movie. I mean, for me, always, I think the Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 movies are in a class by themselves. So I put them at the top of the list, like holding the number one spot as a trilogy. And then I think like Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, the first Incredibles, they're kind of all up there. I think of late Coco has really rocketed up there where it's up there. Incredibles 2 to me is sort of in the middle third of those movies.
Okay.
So I don't think it's Cars 2 or 3, which are kind of at the bottom. I think it's sort of in that middle third tier there. That's where I think that's where it sits.
Now, since it takes off right after, and it's been 14 years, I'm sure there's lots of people who didn't see the first one. Mm-hmm. Like myself, would they be able to understand it?
Yeah. I mean, I think you can see Incredibles 2 without seeing Incredibles 1 because they do kind of refer to it a bunch. Mm-hmm. But I mean, why would you do that? Why? Just go watch Incredibles 1. It's like an, I don't even think it's a 2-hour movie. Watch it. It's enjoyable. You'll laugh. And then you can watch Incredibles 2.
Ah, fair enough. So if you had to give it a score, what would you give it?
For me, Incredibles 2 gets like a 4.5 out of 5.
Nice.
It's very good. It's very good. It's very enjoyable.
4.5 out of 5 for Incredibles 2. That sounds incredible. I'm just going to keep using that same joke. That isn't funny.
Didn't make me cry like the Mr. Rogers movie, but that's okay.
That's weird because I find in every Pixar movie there's one moment where you're just like...
Definitely the short beforehand.
It's getting a little dusty in here.
Yeah. this one didn't have that. The short did, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of childhood, a lot of people love Nintendo, mm-hmm. adults and children alike.
Sure do.
I wish that Steven was here today, but we're recording this on the day that the Raptors made kind of a big move So he is covering Raptors.
Raptors made a big move? I didn't know about that.
Nothing happened.
Yeah.
The actual Raptors mascot is just going to wear a different shirt. That's the big news.
He's switching to the red jersey.
He's switching back to the red jersey. It's fine.
He's wearing the purple.
Oh, I love the purple with the picture of him on the front of it. Like, it's amazing.
How meta.
No, we're going back to E3 to find out exactly what Nintendo not only showed off, but has in store this week. We're going to talk to Andrew Collins, community manager for Nintendo Canada.
So, Andrew, just to start, Nintendo had, I think it's fair to say, a monster year since announcing and releasing the Switch and everything that sort of came after it. There was a huge success. I think a lot of people felt that Nintendo needed to have that kind of success, and it happened. So coming into this year's E3, building off that success, did you guys feel excitement? Did you feel like there was a little bit of pressure to kind of live up to that, having had that kind of a big success in the past 12 months?
There's always excitement as we come into E3. You know, I like to tell people E3 for companies like us, it's kind of like our Olympics, and, you know, we're coming here to get the gold medal. And over the last 2 years, if you remember, last year we had Super Mario Odyssey. The year before we were introducing the Zelda title. And this year's a little different because, you know, we've got a range of really, really good titles. So it's nice to see a lot of great games that are kind of sharing the spotlight rather than, you know, Super Mario Odyssey, et cetera, from last year. So, you know, the most anticipated title we've had so far this year is Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, which is, as you well know, you know, one of the biggest franchises and one of the biggest fan bases in the world.
Right. So let's talk about it. I mean, definitely Smash Brothers. I feel like coming into E3 was people were kind of chomping at the bit. They wanted to know more. It was one of the titles that people were really excited about. And then you guys basically just went all out and laid it all out there. So tell us what's coming in terms of the Smash Brothers universe.
Well, I mean, it's called Ultimate, and it makes sense. It's because it's kind of like the ultimate Super Smash Brothers because, you know, starting off, it's a brand new game. It was built from the ground up with all the expertise of the last 20 years of Smash Brothers games. And rather than have that decision, you know, which fighters of all the fighters that we've previously had, which one do we bring back? This time we said, you know, let's bring every single one back. So no more are you going to have people saying, oh, I wish they'd got this fighter or this fighter. Literally every fighter in the game that's ever been is in there. And so that results in when people start playing the game on December 7th, they'll have 66 fighters to choose from.
How did you guys come to that decision? You know, because with each Smash Brothers, you know, there's an inclusion of, you know, some new characters from different franchises, from different things in pop culture. And this time, I guess you guys just decided to throw them all in there. Was there any consideration to not do that, or was it just, you know what, we just want to lay it all out there this time?
Well, I mean, one of the key things for Nintendo in every decision that we make is what will the fans think to this. And so we wanted to create the ultimate Super Smash Brothers game, and the best way to do that was include as much as we could. And, you know, that starts off with every fighter that's previously been. We've got some new fighters this time around. We've got the Inklings from Splatoon and Ridley from the Metroid series there on display here at E3. And, you know, we did that with some stages as well. But, you know, some of the most popular stages are coming back. We've got new stages. And then even down to the artwork, you know, Mario obviously would be in there, but this time we've introduced new costumes. So I've been playing with Mario in his Super Mario Odyssey wedding outfit, and Link's got the champion's tunic. So it's funny, I had it described yesterday when I was talking to someone. They said it's kind of like the fever dream for all Super Smash Brothers fans, because it's like we just ticked boxes for them. And that's what we want to hear, because, you know, we want to help the fans who love Smash love it even more, and we want to introduce it to, you know, younger gamers probably who haven't had much experience of playing the previous versions of Smash. And so one of the best ways to do that was to look at all the different franchises that we're representing and make sure that we have something that everybody would know.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Ridley there. I know I was on Twitter when that was announced, and people kind of lost their minds there.
Yeah.
Did you guys anticipate that kind of reaction?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. It's funny. In a meeting this morning, we watched a video taken from the Nintendo New York store of that exact moment. And it's just, you know, we think the microphone broke because there was just, you know, there was this building and building of excitement. And suddenly when it was revealed, it was like, oh, no, the mic just cracked. It was gone.
Yeah, so it's safe to say Nintendo fans definitely were pumped for that move. Andrew, you know, there was a lot of announcements, and we'll get to some of the other ones there, but something that you guys had pulled the covers off previously was the Metroid announcement from last year, but no mention of Metroid this year. And I know on our show, Steve and Colin are both big fans, and they just kind of were scratching their head, hoping for a little bit more. Can you just talk about the omission there? Is it just because it's in the works and you guys don't have anything to show off at this particular point? Or are you just saving it for later? What's the story there?
Well, what we wanted to do with E3 this year, and it's something that it's quite typical of our E3 presentations, is we want to focus on games that people will be able to play in 2018. And so that's why we've got Mario Tennis Aces, Pokemon titles. That's why they're on display at E3, and it's why other titles may not be on display this year.
I see. Interesting, interesting. Okay, let's talk a little bit more. You mentioned a little bit about Mario. I know there's one of the more popular franchises in Nintendo's history is Super Mario Party, and the Mario Party, it's been, I guess, like 20 years since Mario Party's been around.
Yep.
What can you tell me about the latest iteration that's coming to the Switch?
Well, it's the first version that's coming to the Switch. We announced it this week, so that was kind of a secret to a lot of people, and it's a really interesting idea that they've come up with, you know, really playing on that play-together element that Nintendo Switch brings to gaming, and also the portable element. If you'll have seen in the video, there are modes where you can actually put, you know, two Switches next to each other and create an extended board game. So in the demo that we showed in the video, you've got a tank game where someone's controlling the tank, and they just maneuver the tank off the edge of one Nintendo Switch straight onto the other side. And that's kind of the novel update gaming we can bring with the portable and the portable nature of Nintendo Switch. And who doesn't want to play a Super Mario Party when they're camping?
Hey, I want to play Mario Party at all times. So camping, yeah. Not camping, whenever
anywhere,
we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, anywhere, really. So it doesn't matter. So I think that's something that appeals to a lot of people. I mean, I know obviously Smash Brothers was the big thing, but for you personally, what Smash Brothers aside, what sort of stands out for you in terms of what Nintendo has been showing off at E3 this year?
Well, I think there's three things for me. You know, one of the key things about, you know, the people who work at Nintendo is that we've got our career, but we're also almost, to the person, we're all gamers. And so, you know, my tough task this week is to allow people to play games like Mario Tennis Aces, Overcooked 2, FIFA 19 with me. It's like I've got a constant stream of people to play games with. And there's just so much fun out there. So the third-party titles are great. We've got FIFA's back. We've got the Overcooked 2. Those are great titles for being cooperative, being combative. But then, you know, the bigger one that I'm enjoying playing is the new Pokemon title, that Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu. And what's really making that is playing this with the new accessory called the Pokeball Plus. And if you've seen that, it's essentially you're playing Pokemon with a Pokeball. And it's one of those things that I think Nintendo does brilliantly, is that it introduces a new accessory or a new way to experience a game. And the moment you put it in hand, it's like, oh, it totally makes sense. It's the same with Nintendo Switch. The people, when we announced it, there was people thinking, so it's a hybrid portable console. How does that work? And then, you know, after 5 minutes of playing it, it's like, oh, it works really, really well.
Right. How much of a challenge is that to keep, you know, showing, you unveil the technology and you show that can be played in sort of multiple different ways, and then to have to keep supporting that that philosophy of, okay, it's more than just a typical console, it's more than even just a handheld console, it's several different things in one, and here are more and more and more games that you can use in all these different fashions.
Well, I think it's down to, you know, the benefit that we've got of having some very, very talented developers working with us, from the first party teams behind, you know, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate to teams like Ubisoft, who they brought the Starling Battle for Atlas. And that's an interesting game from those guys, because it takes the Toys to Life category and really innovates how it does it, because you have this framework, which is essentially a cool spaceship, which you can take apart. And this is a physical thing I'm talking about, so it's a physical toy. And you can take apart and put the rings on backwards. And how you build that spaceship is reflected on how the spaceship in the game plays. And that's, you know, one example of a third-party team figuring out what different can we do. And I think when it comes down to it, you know, the key benefit for Nintendo Switch is that it's a natural system for playing together. You can play it at home on the big screen. You could pick it up. You could play it in the back of the car while you're driving to the cottage. And then when you've got the fire going, the four of you can sit around, or eight of you can sit around, and you can all play, you know, all the different multiplayer games that we've got coming out this year. Now, we like to build championships. We've got the esports championships with Smash and Splatoon 2, but we like to create a way that a family can turn their couch into a tournament.
Right. You know, one of the things that maybe Nintendo has been criticized for is a lack of third-party support on some of its previous consoles, but it sounds like that's changing with the Switch, with, you know, some games that are popular being ported over. And, of course, Dragon Ball FighterZ is one of those that's coming to the Switch, where people are pretty pumped about.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comment for previous systems that we've had, but with Nintendo Switch, we're just seeing more and more third-party, and particularly Nindies as well. A lot of them really want to work with us. Mm-hmm. You know, on the booth, as I've discussed, we've got Overcooked 2, which is a spectacular title. We've got FIFA 19, which is, you know, for football fans like myself, with the World Cup starting this week, that's a perfect timing for people to get a demo of that.
Yeah, World Cup coming to Canada, too. I don't know if you heard the news today, but it's 2026.
So Toronto is part of that, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
Looks like I'll have to organize a work trip.
Yeah, make it happen. Make it happen. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
But going back to what we were saying about third party, I think one of the interesting numbers that I heard today is that outside of the Nintendo booth, there are more than 120 dev systems across different third-party booths at E3. And that's a big number. That's a lot of systems out there that people are experiencing Nintendo Switch outside of our booth.
Andrew, I want to ask you about E3 itself. There's been obviously some major changes over the last few years in terms of people switching in, switching out, allowing the public in. How has that really changed the experience of E3 for you guys? I know you've been to a few now with Nintendo. What's it like, you know, maybe having a little bit more space, also having members of the public there come down? Because usually it's just industry people, journalists, that kind of thing. So that dynamic seems to be quite different. What's it like on the show floor?
It's busy. It's without a doubt very busy, but E3's always been like that. I think, you know, we're seeing that numbers still continue to rise. And in terms of space, you know, Nintendo, we've had the area that we've had for many, many years, so that increase hasn't really been felt. But for us, the benefit of this is that we get the chance for, you know, the fans to experience the games ahead of time. Like last year when we had Super Mario Odyssey available to play like 4 months before it came out, there were literally lines were 5 hours long for that. And if you didn't get in line within the first 10 minutes of the show opening, you didn't get to play that day. So what we did this time around is we worked with the website to actually figure out how to do schedules, and people could book appointments to play Smash and the other key titles, because it goes back to what we say about how, for us, Nintendo, it's all about creating that great fan experience.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap this up?
It's just, you know, it's a pleasure to be at something like this and see the fans, and you know, to see how everybody's really taking to Nintendo Switch. As you mentioned, it's been such a great year, but it's not just it's not just Nintendo Switch that's had a strong year. You know, for the 3DS family of systems, we're 8 years into that lifetime, but it's still going really strong. We've got some great games coming out. We've got Captain Toad coming out in a few weeks, WarioWare Gold, and then just the Mario & Luigi coming out next year. And, you know, it's still going strong. Our sales are up year on year. So for people who are wondering whether we're going after the portable, absolutely not. Not when you've got 1,000 games that you could choose from on 3DS Family.
That was Andrew Collins, Community Manager, Nintendo Canada, talking all about everything Nintendo coming up. And like I said before, that booth was bananas big. They are really trying to push it hard. I mean, I think they have to, but mm-hmm. I'm a little more cynical than most Nintendo people.
I think there's reason to be.
Yeah. I think that they just needed to, like, when you have such a gangbusters last year, you have to, you can't expect you're going to have the same.
Nope.
But you still have to come out with some pretty big guns a-blazing.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I talked to you, as you heard in the interview just now, I did ask Andrew about it. Nintendo had a monster year they desperately needed to have. Really, it's been like a monster 18 months to almost 2 years now, which they were very, very badly in need of. So they've done it, but now can they keep it up? They're kind of a victim of their own success. Okay, the Switch was a huge success. Breath of the Wild, amazing. All the titles that have come on the Switch, Odyssey, everybody's loving it. The SNES Classic, the NES Classic, it's all been great. Now what?
Yeah.
And of course, as you know, is the way of the world, what have you done for me lately? So they can't really rest on their laurels. So people are really eager, but it's going pretty well.
You know, I mean, Nintendo is just Nintendo, right? I mean, you never know what they're going to do next. That seems to be my motto. Every time I think they're down, they're like showing me up left, right, and center.
That is very true. That so many times where you either count them out or you think they're going left, they're going right, or they just pull something. Like I still remember when that tweet came out about the NES Classic and people were like, what's this now?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening? And so many of us thought it was an actual joke.
Yeah.
And then they're like, and then it came out from the actual Nintendo Canada account or Nintendo America account or whatever it was. And we were like, what? And it's just, and by the way, if you want an NES Classic, you can get one. It's on store shelves now. You can get one.
In stores now.
Yeah.
Speaking of video games, just before we head out, I wanted to say that I have been actually playing The Crew 2.
Mm-hmm.
The lovely people of Ubisoft sent me a nice little code, so I started playing it. I was not a big fan of the first Crew, So I thought, why not give this one a try?
Yes, I recall playing number one and not hating it, but not loving it.
It had that stupid storyline, which was basically like Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, very Fast and the Furious.
And it was all that kind of dark look about it. And I was like, seriously, dude? Like, this is what we're doing?
But it wasn't like Fast and the Furious because they didn't say the word family 19,000 times?
No.
They said it 18,000 times.
It just wasn't, it wasn't great. And I think my guess is that the numbers really showed that I was not the only person to think that, because The Crew 2 is totally different.
Really?
It is totally different. It is almost like they took a page out of the Forza Horizon handbook.
Mm.
It is fun. It is bright colored. It is musical. It is not only car racing, it is boat racing, it is airplanes.
Boat racing?
Yeah, it is crazy.
Like, you're racing boats?
Your crew does everything.
Boats, boats, boats.
Boats, boats, boats. So I haven't played it enough to really give it a score or anything. I'm hoping in the next few weeks I'm going to have something up on the website. So far, though, I do not like the airplanes.
Mm.
I don't like the flying at all. The boats are so fun. But and the car racing is fine.
I mean, if I had to race something, I would say I'd race boats over planes.
Yeah, I just find that maybe it's because I haven't played a lot of the planes, but I just don't find it handles as well, and I don't get the thrill that I would. I find it's funny because, you know, obviously planes are the fastest moving of all three of those.
Obviously.
I find that it really slows the game down.
Really?
Like, it's a lot of, like, just going to the next one. You know how, like, when you're
hitting the gates,
when you're in a car and you're zooming around and you can do kind of tricks and stuff. But I find when it comes to the airplanes, I guess because you don't want to get, like, over motion sickness or anything, it's kind of
flying straight
and just, like, slight curve. You don't want
to banking to the left.
Or when you, like, overcorrect really quickly, then you're suddenly crashing into a
building. How much of it has to do with environment? Because when you're driving, obviously, things are flying past you, you know, like you're on in a mountainside or on whatever street, you're seeing stuff go by you. But in the air, it's just air. So, I mean,
you're just
up there and it's just clear sky, I assume.
Yeah, it's mostly just like, don't hit that building. So, like, that's really
that
the goal.
Is solid advice, by the way.
I have hit several buildings because I'm not good at it. Maybe this, I don't think it's one of those things where I just don't like it because I'm not good at it. I just don't think it's as exciting as boat racing and car racing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, good for them for stretching it out a little bit. The map still looks huge, and literally when you open it, you have three things that pop up, three events that pop up, and they're literally on, like, opposite coasts. So it's, like, Florida, California, Arizona? One of the West Coast places.
Sure.
And then you go to a place up in the East Coast. So, you know, it's right away they show you a good variety of what your locations are going to be like.
Is there a story mode?
No, there doesn't seem to be any story. The story is you are a...
You're in a car and you're racing.
You're a racer and you want to be part of the crew. The weirdest thing, though, in this game, the absolute weirdest thing is basically you're just driving around. You get your avatar, and you don't really, I mean, you get to dress them, but it's limited clothing. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Maybe you unlock more later. Again, I haven't played the whole thing. Not even close. But when you go into what is your apartment to check out your different outfits or to buy new outfits or to jazz up your cars, it goes into the weirdest first-person perspective where it's similar to, like, a rolling camera. Like, there's no bumps. It's not like you're walking and the camera is slightly vibrating. It reminds me of going through original Doom. You know how it's just, like, camera perspective? It's like, like, everything is a straight line. And there's, so it's so weird to go from driving around and doing that to going into such what is basically, like, such an old school walking mechanic. Like, it doesn't even feel like you're walking. You're just, like, panning over and moving over. And, you know, it's a little uncomfortable. I found it, like, really kind of takes you out of the game. There's a photo mode in here, though, just to be positive again. There's a photo mode. There's the map interaction is pretty decent. Again, I'm going to have my full review on it, hopefully by the time the next show kicks up, depending on how things go.
Next time on Gaming in the Six, does Christine still love the crew, or does the crew, too, get a boo?
Oh.
We'll find out on Gaming in the Six.
That's it. I don't know how we can continue the show from that on. There you go.
You know who's going to be Gaming in the Six soon? Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the Raptors news. That wasn't... It wasn't what we said before.
Kawhi Leonard, cover of NBA 2K Canada, 2K19. Watch it. It's coming.
I love DeMar. It makes me sad he's going away.
Me too.
Anyway, that is it for Gaming in the Six for this week. Again, if you like the show, tell your friends. Subscribe to our podcast. Check out our website.
I want to do what they do on YouTube where they say, we'll put the link right here, but it's audio so you can't. I'm doing the finger
right
thing
here.
Where you point out. It says the link is right here.
Or maybe it's up here?
Or up here in the corner here.
That's my favorite one, the closing where they don't know where the link's going to be. Somewhere
you
got to
do the big wax on, wax off arm. Somewhere here. Yeah. Here is where the link is. Somewhere.
So subscribe. Give us a little comment. Radar.
A review.
A
as
review.
They say.
Not a rate, but a review. Check out the website gamingin6.com for Mullen Qureshi.
Bye.
I am Christine Chubb. You will hear from us again in 2 weeks.
Bye.